I'm Captain Dale Dye, and this is KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Jumped up and down. I would have started screaming, jihad yourself, you bastard.
Experience the emotion. KFI.
Southern California's KFI.
Los Angeles.
News on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks.
This is KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Captain Dale Dye, KFI's military analyst, here with you on Sunday, as we usually are. We're having a little technical difficulty, but that's neither here nor there. I'm happy to have Dr. Robert Williscroft here with me. Dr. Williscroft is a successful author, teacher, pioneer in several disciplines. I served 23 years in the United States Navy and with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. This is a guy who brings great insight to the geopolitical situation we are facing today. He's also a guy who brings a sort of a military insight, a feel for what we've got on. Robert, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Listen, we talked for a few moments about how a guy with your technical background, you're an accomplished diver, a dive master, an underwater researcher, a guy who does more technical things underwater than any of the rest of us can probably do above the water. But it's interesting that you, I mean, I understand it from a military perspective. You're a naval officer, but suddenly you come from this technical orientation and running successful companies, being successful countries. Successful companies, being a CEO and so on and so forth. And now you've got what I think are some of the most insightful looks at the situation facing us today in this global war on terrorism than any I've read. How did you get there? How'd you make that big transition?
Well, to make a long story short, about a decade ago when the Ayatollah Khamenei put out a death sentence on Salman Rushdie, I was running a company where I had the back page of a magazine, a national magazine that I use for advertising, and I chose to use that back page in that month to trash the Ayatollah. And that was the beginning of my, shall we say, involvement with militant Islam, because I immediately found myself the subject of death threats and picketing by people who wouldn't identify themselves. And so I decided if I have an enemy, I had better become expert on him. And that's where it started.
Know your enemy.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is one of the things I want to get to today. But before we do that, just before the break, Robert, I was talking about this situation where we have information now that a United States Navy sailor, Sigelman Second Class, aboard the Benfold, which was a destroyer in the Coles battle group, when the Cole was attacked in Yemen in October of 2002, that perhaps this guy, and I point out, I specify that this is alleged, but his name has been released and the information has been released, that this guy may have well emailed complete ship movement plans and so on and so forth to a militant Islamic website. Now, as a naval officer, give me your reaction to that.
I really can't give you the reaction I'd like to give you on the air.
Yeah, okay. I understand. Well, you see the point, though. Where I'm going here is to an article that you wrote, which really, really tripped my trigger as a professional military man. It's an article that talks about wolves in sheep's clothing. Now, in that article, you pointed to the potential danger posed by Muslim chaplains in the United States military forces, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps. Of course, the Marine Corps uses Navy chaplains. But what really got to me then is I said, well, wait a minute. He's talking about chaplains and their lack of appropriate vetting, or vetting by the wrong people, if you will. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But it seems to me that Muslim kids in our armed forces today could be potential sleepers. I mean, they could be gotten to very easily if they become disgruntled when they go to the mosque. They could easily be talked into doing something that they otherwise would not do. Do you see that as a potential danger?
I see it even as more than that. We have a tendency in our country, in our culture, and you just exhibited it, to buy into the idea that we make up our minds the way we want to, and if we get disgruntled, we might do something because we're disgruntled. When you have grown up inside the Wahhabi culture, that's not how it works. You're told what to do, and you do it.
Okay, let's explore that here a minute, because as you point out, that's extremely foreign to us. Talk a little bit about the Wahhabi culture. What is it, and what does it demand?
Well, it might be worthwhile if we take a couple of minutes just to look at the nature of Islam and the two major parts of Islam and where Wahhabi fits into it.
Yeah, Sunni and Shiite.
Exactly.
All right,
the
go
Sunnis
ahead.
And
yeah,
the
sure.
Shiite. Well, all of Islam is based really on two writings, the Quran and the Sunnah. The Quran, of course, is kind of like the Bible, and the Sunnah supposedly records the prophet's
life. The
life
of the prophet.
And when you put these things together, you end up with the Sharia, which is kind of analogous to our codified law.
And these are where the fatwas come in.
Well, yeah. What fatwas are basically are statements, interpretations of law that have the same strength as a court ruling, say an appellate court ruling here in the United States, exactly the same kind of a meaning. And they can only be overturned by something called a fiqh, or they can be confirmed by a fiqh. And all Muslims, whether you're Shia or whether you're Sunni, are subject to these fatwas and the underlying interpretations that your particular imam is giving you. So the Wahhabis take a very, very strict, literal interpretation of Sunni Islam.
Kind of the Southern Baptists of the whole thing.
Well, if you were Southern Baptist, you might even be a bit insulted there, because these guys go to tremendous extremes. For example, the original split was whether or not Ali was the designated successor to Muhammad 1,400 years ago.
Right. That was the split between Shia and
the original
and
split. Right. And for the ensuing 1,400 years, the Sunnis have been making their point with war that they were right, kind of taking it out on the Shiites, who, of course, responded back with equal ferocity. But the Wahhabis buy into the literal, absolute, literal interpretation of the Quran. And when somebody like Osama bin Laden comes up with a fatwa, which he backs up with pre-positioned fiqhs, this guy's not dumb. He backs them up with pre-positioned fiqhs. If you're a Wahhabi Muslim, you do it. No questions asked.
Yeah.
Period.
Now this could be. Let me just see if I can stretch that. Having understood what a Wahhabi would do, faced with a fatwa backed up by a fiqh. In other words, he's looking at law. I don't want to get too involved in these terms here, but it's a good point. So here is a Muslim soldier, let's say, at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and he goes off post, and he attends mosque. He attends services at a mosque. And one of the imams, or a lesser cleric, gets to him and says, you know, we have a fatwa here that says that you must do this sort of thing, no matter what it is. You must cooperate in the war against the infidels, and then tells him how he could do that sort of thing. If he was in a Wahhabist sect, he would feel compelled absolutely to do that. Is
absolutely.
That right?
Not only would he feel compelled, he would be eternally damned if he didn't.
Well, if that's the situation, how do we approach this? Is it necessary that we find out where these Wahhabist sort of mosques are? Are they? They're not all Wahhabists, are they?
No, but the fundamental schools throughout our country and everywhere else in the world, the basic schooling, if a child goes to an Islamic school, is controlled by the Wahhabis, even the Shiites.
All right. And so this is a youngster who's 7 years old, and he goes to one of the madrasas, and literally he's taught Wahhabism from that time.
He doesn't learn reading except to read the Quran. He doesn't learn writing except to communicate with others about the Quran. He doesn't learn arithmetic except to add up the money in his pocket. He knows nothing of science, nothing of geopolitical history. He doesn't even know where he is on the planet.
But in this country, in the United States, he would go to the madrasa at part-time and would go to he or she and then would go to regular public school in the United States.
Not if his parents can help it.
I see.
And beyond that, he doesn't listen to the same television your kids and my kids listen to. He listens to, you know what,
yeah.
Al Jazeera.
Yeah, he listens to Al Jazeera. So that's a difficult situation. And what? How can you police that from the inside of an organization like the military? I mean, clearly, you know, we're going to get into the PC Nazis here very quickly who are saying that we're profiling everybody that's a Muslim and so on and so forth. That's true. In effect, we are doing that if we're fighting against this Wahhabism. But what are your thoughts about policing it? How do we find out who these people are and what pressures are on them?
I think perhaps if shipboard, and I don't know whether you ever served shipboard.
Many times.
Okay, then you'll know what I'm talking about. If you got a problem with one of the divisions, you go to the chief and you have a talk with him and you put all the pressure you have to on the chief. And if you're good and he's good, the problem's going to go away. You don't worry about the kid at the bottom of the ranks because he's going to do what the chief tells him, period. Or the chief's going to put a boot up, you know what.
All right. Yeah.
So what we need to do is go to the chiefs. And the chiefs right now are the guys who are getting up there and issuing fatwas saying, kill Jews, kill Americans, kill anybody who isn't Islam.
All right, let's pursue that in just a minute. We've got to take a break. I want to remind you that my guest is Dr. Robert Willis-Croft. He'll be with us for the rest of this hour. If you'd like to call and ask myself or Dr. Willis-Croft a question, please call 1-800-520-1KFI. I'm Captain Dale Dye, and you're listening to KFI AM. If you have a question for Dr. Robert Willis-Croft or for me, please give us a call, 1-800-520-1KFI. Dr. Willis-Croft will be with me for the rest of this hour talking about militant Islam, the folks who I think we need to be focusing on. What's militant Islam about? You've heard us talk about Wahhabism. You've heard us talk about how this infiltrates, how this gets itself inculcated, how it becomes an extraordinary danger. And it not only is a danger internationally, but it's a danger here in our own nation, something that Dr. Willis-Croft has written extensively about, something that we'll talk about for a little while. One of the things that you have recommended, Robert, which is interesting, it's radical, but it's interesting. Radical's okay. I mean, you need radical techniques and tactics in this weird asymmetrical war, this global war on terrorism that we're fighting. And really, that's a misnomer, isn't it? I mean, what we're fighting here is a global war on militant Islam.
Right. The jihad.
Yeah, it is. It is their jihad, the third jihad, essentially, that they're in. But what occurs to me is that you've recommended that we need to find these Wahhabist preachers. We need to find these folks, these nest of snakes, if you will, here in our own country. These people who preach death and destruction, do anything that to any infidel, anything that is against the book, the teaching, the learning. Now, you say what we need to do is find these guys and hit them. Find out who the badasses are, who the bad actors are, who the guys who are preaching this sort of fundamentalist violence are, and then go get them. The question becomes, how do you find them?
One of the most obvious ways to find them is they have to talk to their flocks. When they talk to their flocks, they are preaching this garbage. And any time that we hear an imam saying or hear of an imam saying, go and kill Americans or Jews or whatever.
Yeah, but Robert, that'll never hold up. It'll never hold up in our court of law or anyplace else. We'd never get away with that. In other words, what you're talking about is making a strike on somebody.
Exactly.
Based on hearsay evidence. Or are you talking about infiltrating the mosque?
I think that when we're talking about the fellas who have notoriety, when they're visible to the public, it's pretty clear when they're making these statements. They often make them and have made them on national television, on Al Jazeera, in other places where the public hears them. I think that if we are structuring what we're doing in the framework of we are at war, and we are at war with militants, with people, soldiers, people who are fighting the war inside our country, we're not talking about courts. We're not talking about the rule of law. We're talking about the rule of war. And in the rule of war, you take out the bad guy. You don't take him to court.
Yeah, I understand that. My question is, are you aware of, and I'm sure you are, you're an intelligent gent, are you aware of public reaction to a plan like this?
I think you would find that public reaction would be dramatically split. There would be a lot of people who would stand up and cheer. There would be those, and I think we all know who they are, who would stand up and cry foul. And I think that we would simply have to explain the facts of life to them. And if we don't, in the next few months, perhaps in the next few weeks, based on something I found out the day before yesterday that we can talk about a bit later, perhaps we're going to find out directly what happens when we don't take these people out before they take us out.
What about the knee-jerk reaction, though, among Muslims? We go in. We find out a guy who's preaching death and destruction and fire and brimstone and Wahhabism, and he's here in our own country. Now, we've got two options. We can pull this guy and put him in prison and say, you know, you're preaching essentially anarchy, and as an anarchist, we're going to put you on trial, we're going to put you in prison. Maybe we could do that, or maybe we could do the Robert Williscroft method, which is go in and pop this sucker right between the running lamps. All right, either way, would we not create a huge knee-jerk reaction? In other words, wouldn't we make the situation worse?
We would certainly create a knee-jerk reaction.
On the part of Muslims.
On the part of the Muslims, I understand. But are we going to make it any worse than it actually is? Maybe it would be worse than it is today. But when these guys start blowing themselves up in the Northgate Mall or downtown in front of the San Juan Bank building or here at KFI, we're going to look at it a lot differently.
Yeah. Do you think, though, and I understand your point. I clearly understand your point. In fact, I'm sort of in favor of the whole thing. But my question is this. Given the generations of young Muslims that have been brought up, both overseas and here in this country, I'm talking here about 16, 17, 18-year-old youngsters, if we pop the Islams who are preaching hate, anarchy, that sort of thing, if whether we pop them or we arrest them or whatever we do, if we take them out of circulation, have we beat the issue? Because they, A, become martyrs, and we talked a bit about that. But now you have this generation that they have essentially inculcated, they've essentially brought up, they've essentially raised, and they haven't gone away. So how have we solved the problem?
I certainly understand what you're saying, and what I want to do is to refer you to something that I came across not too long ago on a website called the Khilafah.com,
okay,
which is a moderately militant place that an awful lot of people go to who are of Islamic persuasion and who tend to buy into the radical side of Islam. What they're saying is that in democratic societies, people feel that they have the right to decide whether to accept liberal values, terminate the life of a baby, exterminate populations in humanitarian wars such as Iraq and so on. But this is something that is contradictory to the very foundations of Islam and its basic beliefs. And then they go on to say that submission to the rule of Islam necessitates the existence of the Islamic State. I'm still quoting. Therefore, the Hadith indicates that the Islamic State is coming and that it will bring the whole of the earth under its authority.
Okay, Doctor, let's hold it right there because I'm up against a hard break, but I want to continue this when we come back. Here comes the knee-jerk part of this. This is KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Captain Dale Dye here with you for about the next 30 minutes. Delighted to have with me in the studio Dr. Robert Williscroft, a man who brings a tremendous insight, both geopolitically and as a former military officer, to the world of the war on terrorism. The business of identifying, of dealing with militant Islam. And this has apparently pushed a hot button in our KFI audience. So I want to give you all a chance to talk to Dr. Williscroft. We'll take them 1, 2, 3 here, Robert, if that's okay. Kent in Contra Costa, you're with Captain Dye and Dr. Robert Williscroft.
Yes, Captain Dye, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you both for your service to our country. With regard to militant Islam, people might tend to think that there's an equivalence between Islam and Christianity. And since Christianity has seen modifying or progressivist or liberal influences such as Unitarianism and so forth, perhaps the same kind of thing would apply to Islam. But isn't there a history of the way Islam, especially Wahhabist Islam, treats people who want to make Islam more peaceful or humane?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think you've hit one, and I'm just going to watch me punt this ball to Robert Williscroft. Robert, go, please.
I got to tell you that you've hit the nail right on the head. There was a time when the Catholic Church did nasty things to people when they didn't agree with them, but they finally came around. There isn't a single point in the 1,400-year history of Sunni Islam, not one single point, where people have not been killed for moving away from the absolute standard.
Well, I tell you, he's absolutely right, Robert. I mean, it is what it is. We've got to face these guys. I mean, they are absolute fundamentalists. They are extremists. And there's no room for moderates. There's no room for middle ground. They're not going to move.
That's because the Quran says that if you disagree, you must die.
Yeah, well, I hope it's not the rest of us who die. Let's take another phone call. Kent, by the way, thanks very much for that question. Ori in Orange, you're on KFI with Captain Dye and Dr. Robert Williscroft. Hi, Ori, can you hear me? Is this Ori or is... All right, we've lost that one. Let's drop it, and we'll talk to Magda in Pinyon Hills.
Hi there, Captain. We're becoming old friends. I talk to you so often on
Absolutely.
Here.
I remember your voice now.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, Doctor and Captain Dye both, this is an entire world of a battleground now with this radical Islamic Muslim. What about the way they used to do it in the old days? These imams in the mosques, you don't go in there and arrest them. You go in there very quietly, and they sort of, like, disappear, and nobody sees them again.
Magda.
That's like the way to do it.
Magda, there it is. I guess so. I tell you, were you ever a sniper?
Well, sir, I used to date a Green Beret or a Special Forces. I think he was Army Special Forces during Vietnam War.
Yeah.
He told me I made him look like a dove, and he was a hawk with big talons.
Magda the Hun. Okay.
Yeah,
all right,
I'm
good.
Hungarian, so what do you expect?
Terrific. Look, you agree, I think, in principle with Robert Rosecroft. So, Robert, tell us what you think about this. You understand the question.
Oh,
why don't
absolutely.
We just go in and blow him away?
It's a little bit difficult to get in there unless you are one of them. And trust me, they know who you are. They know who all of their particular group is when you go in. But these guys don't live in the mosque all the time now, do they?
No, they don't, as a matter of fact. And you know, one of the problems is, look, if you've got a Wahhabist, an imam in a mosque in Newark, New Jersey, and, you know, on Saturdays he preaches this absolute violent anti-infidel sort of rhetoric and wants everyone's duty as a dutiful Muslim is to go out and create havoc and ruin the Western culture, if you will. Look, how do you know that's what's happening in there? If you got to infiltrate a mosque, can we do that? What's that all about? I mean, can we get in there? Will they catch us? Do they know about this? It's a larger problem than we're really covering here.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised, and I have no personal knowledge of this, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Central Intelligence Agency or one of the other agencies that operate out there isn't quietly recruiting people with absolute vetted background whom we can trust totally, the way you, Captain Dye, used to trust the guys that you went to battle with.
Sure. Wouldn't that be more aptly an FBI job?
I don't care who does it.
Yeah, I don't either, right, frankly.
But in any case, we get these guys in there. I think they're out there. I personally know a fella who happens to be a dentist who would be glad to do it.
Yeah, I hear you. I know. But look, we've got a situation here, Robert. I mean, the plain fact of the matter is this is another intelligence failure. You know, we need to get in there. And it's domestic intelligence. It's something that the FBI needs to be doing.
Well, you know, we call it domestic intelligence, but when you have these guys coming in from outside and then doing damage to us here, is it really domestic?
That's a good point. I'm not sure whether it is or not. Let's take another phone call here. We've got an alternate opinion on Muslims. Ori from Orange, you're on KFI with Captain Dye and Dr. Williscroft.
Hello?
Ori, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Can you hear me? Yes, I can. Please ask your question.
Certainly. I'm a Muslim, mm-hmm. and I've been in this country for about 30 years.
Okay.
And I have a slightly different perspective than your guest is putting together.
Please share that.
Okay. We talk about militant Islam. You know, in any group of people, you will find good people and bad people. We can also talk about militant Christians. You know what I mean?
No.
In other words, let me finish my point. All I'm trying to say is there are good people and bad people in any culture, in any religion, in any society.
Okay, I'll grant you that.
We cannot just make a sweeping generalization that all Muslims are bad. Let me just make my point very briefly.
All right, make your point, but it's
so
off
the point
off
is, we cannot generalize. We cannot say all the Wahhabis are bad. There are some good ones and there are some bad ones. For example, myself, I'm very hardworking, very loyal.
Are you a Wahhabist?
Yes, I am. I'm very dedicated.
If you're a Wahhabi, sir, then I won't let you anywhere near my wife or my children or me.
And I don't intend to be near your wife. All I'm saying is we need to be very clear about it. We can't make sweeping generalizations. Like you said, we need to find them and get rid of them. There are judicial processes that we have in this country that we're very proud of, and that we've sacrificed a great deal of blood, sweat, over the last 200 years, and we cannot just get rid of this process. This is very important to our culture.
All right, but if we utilize this process, we go in and we take a Wahhabist Islam out because he's preaching anarchy?
No.
We don't?
Like anybody who preaches anarchy, you know, there are certain judicial processes that are established in this country which we honor and which we respect, and that's why we are American.
And you're saying Wahhabists do not preach anarchy?
No, wait. All groups of people preach anarchy. There are certain groups.
No, they don't.
Trust me. I know Christians who preach anarchy. So all I'm saying is we cannot make sweeping generalizations. If we find certain judicial process that has been violated, we need to take them
no
to court.
No one, sir, is making sweeping generalizations with one exception.
Okay.
And that is this. The Wahhabi sect of militant Islam preaches that only Islam should be allowed to exist on this earth. We can't live like that, my friend.
Okay. Let me just give you some background. 2 minutes, like your guest did when he started the show. You know, what is Islam? Abraham had two wives, Sarah and Hagar.
Look, we're not going to go through this. We're not going to go through this.
All I'm saying is Islam is the same as Christianity and Judaism, believing in the one God. I mean, there's not the concept is the same. The belief is the same.
The concept may be the same, but the application of it to society is not, sir.
Well, could you be more specific?
Sure, I can. Okay. I'd be happy to be more specific. I don't see the average Lutheran preacher standing up on a pulpit saying that anyone who's not a Lutheran must be killed. I do, however, see Wahhabist imams doing that. That's how it's different. I'm up against a hard break, and I've got to go. If you want to stay, we'll put you on hold here, and we'll talk some more about this when we come back. I'm Captain Dale Dye, and this is KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. We're privileged to have with us in studio Dr. Robert Williscroft, who is a very insightful lecturer, teacher, and writer on the subject of militant Islam, has been willing to share with us today some insights on militant Islam, Wahhabism, what the nature of the enemy is. I see we have a question from Mark in Ventura that will shift us a little bit, but we'll make for some interesting radio, I hope. Mark in Ventura, you're on with Captain Dye and Dr. Williscroft. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dale. It's an honor to speak to you.
Thank you, sir.
I just finished Paul Williams' book, and he paints a pretty grim scenario with these nuclear suitcases. And I was just wondering how credible you think that is. And if they had something like that in the country, would there be a way to get like a heat signature via satellite?
Well, look, Mark, I got to tell you, here's what I think, just briefly, and then I'm going to turn it over to the expert. I think it's not very credible, but let's talk to Robert Williscroft, who is the expert. Robert, what do you think?
Well, Mark, let me tell you briefly that my background is as a nuclear expert. That's where my formal training is. So I'm coming to you with, I hope, a little bit of credibility here. These bombs are designed in such a way that they have a sphere that contains a special radioactive form of hydrogen called tritium, and this stuff is so leaky, it is so sneaky that it can't stay in these spheres for very long, and they have to be continuously recharged. The suitcase bombs that Paul Williams is talking about, if they are in the country, and I think it's credible that they could be here, they're not going to go off. There's nothing these people can do to make them go off. It is functionally, virtually impossible. I would be willing to stand next to one of them when they try to let it off and laugh at him when it goes poof and fizzle.
Yeah, I've
it's
got a little experience. Got a little experience with those things myself, and I tell you, they are not foolproof by any stretch of the imagination. The technology is just, I think, it's too difficult to defeat.
Let me put one more thing in here too. On this wildly offhand chance that it would go off, the scenario that Williams paints is just dramatically incorrect. These are small nuclear devices, and if one of these were to go off in Manhattan, the kind of damage he's talking about simply would not be there. And if you want to know a little bit more about it, go to my website, www.thedeadhand.com, all one word, and look up the nuclear weapons section, and you'll have some very specific, detailed information on exactly what you might expect if some bozo could make one of these things go off in the first place.
Yeah. Loose nukes is less of a problem, I think, than we think it is. I'm more worried about biological and a number of other things. I think one of the more interesting things, folks, we'll get to your calls. I know there's a lot of them out here in a few minutes. But you know what troubles me more, Robert, really, is the agricultural threat that we're beginning to see now. We're really beginning to think of agro-terrorism, where folks come in and can infect the food chain. This is something that we're just beginning to pay enough attention to, and it's a very, very difficult proposition in terms of securing farms and securing dairy cattle and a number of other things. It's easy to get at that sort of deal.
Yeah, it's especially difficult when you start talking about the approaches we're taking now to the genetically engineered crops that we've modified to give us certain specific advantages as opposed to non-engineered crops. And we found that these things tend to migrate into places we didn't expect them to with all of the best scientific controls we know how to put on them. So when someone's trying to do it on purpose, it's an unstoppable thing. It can be done,
yep.
Period.
Yeah, it really is. But it's another element that points out what a difficult situation we're in.
Absolutely.
We need to keep our guard up. Let's talk to Mike in Laguna Hills. Hi, Mike. You're on KFI with Captain Dye and Dr. Robert Williscroft.
Captain Dale, I'll try and be as quick as I can.
Shoot.
Huge amount of respect for you, sir. I've
Thank
followed
you.
Your career and your movie career particularly, and very impressed with you as a very honorable servant of this country. Doctor, we're in the situation, I think, where how do we separate these fundamentalist Islamic types away from the mainstream? Because we're kind of tiptoeing around a situation where we're looking at a possible war with Islam as a whole, and how do we avoid tripping it into that?
I don't think you can. I think that it is inevitable. It's going to happen. And those people, those Muslims who are honorable, decent people, are going to have to decide whose side they're on. And if they choose the wrong side, the same thing will happen to them that's going to happen to the bad guys. It's that simple.
Yeah, you know, and that's really an excellent question, Mike, and I appreciate your asking it. We've got a situation here with militant Islam that's really driving down an extraordinary patch of rough water. It really is. It's going to come to a huge conflict. It's going to come to a situation in which Muslims throughout the world are going to have to understand they can either coexist or they can go to war in the third great jihad against the infidel.
All 1.3 billion of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is a difficult situation. How do we separate out the fundamentalists? Look, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how we do that, but I am sure of one thing. We have to be allowed to exist. We cannot surrender, fall back, and say, look, we're outnumbered here, and so we'll all become Muslims. That's not going to work. It won't work in Western Europe. It won't work in the United States. We're simply going to have to say, I will stand here, and I will back up no more, and if it leads me to war, it leads me to war.
There is an interesting battlefield analogy here that can apply. If